Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, firstly, thanks very much for the invitation to be able to participate in your important national forum. And doing so as the Minister for Tourism, I'd also like to welcome you to Canberra. And in doing so, urge you, if you can, to actually take a little bit of time out to experience some of our great cultural opportunities here in Canberra, such as the National Library, the National Museum, the Art Gallery, the recently opened Portrait Gallery and the Australian War Memorial. Having said that, my friends, I'm going to say it's a great pleasure to actually be with you here today to discuss another very important part of my portfolio responsibilities, namely Australia's energy future. Can I say that it's a very challenging and exciting time to actually be Australia's Minister for Resources and Energy at the moment. The 21st century is Australia's opportunity. It is Asia's century, and I contend that Australia is brilliantly positioned to be a very important part of it. The insatiable thirst for energy means energy security is one of the big issues confronting Australia and the world today. Access to energy resources is the key to continuing economic growth, and the challenges of meeting global energy demand in a sustainable way are daunting. Australia's place in the world in this debate is front and centre, and no one should underestimate our importance. Last month, by way of example, I travelled to Rome, where I had the pleasure of being the first Australian minister to actually attend a G8 energy ministers meeting. As the world's largest exporter of coal, the second largest exporter of uranium, and the fifth largest exporter of LNG, Australia is being recognised as an emerging energy superpower. This is a sobering reality which brings both a responsibility to provide for our own energy security and an opportunity to help the Asia Pacific meet its rapidly growing energy needs. Energy security underpins economic security, meaning Australia has a central role to play in pulling our region out of recession. There are presently 1.4 billion people in the world who do not have access to electricity. As the developing nations of the world, led by China and India, continue to modernise, demand for Australian resources and energy supplies will continue to grow. In a carbon-constrained economy, demand for Australian LNG and uranium will be most evident. Gas is going to be a very important transition fuel in the coming decades, not only in Australia, but also on our doorstep in Asia. Australia's world-class gas resources mean it is very well placed to capitalise on this shift. In the context of energy security, climate change and economic recovery, further development of Australian LNG is one of my top priorities. The Gorgon LNG project alone will potentially involve an investment of $30 to $50 billion, as big as our recent federal government economic stimulus package. Similarly might indicate that projects such as those projects are just not important for the state of Western Australia. By way of example, one in four of the construction workers involved in the Pluto project at the moment in northwest Western Australia actually comes from the east coast of Australia. These projects are of major national significance and important to our endeavours to actually return to a budget surplus from an Australian government point of view. Similarly, concerns relating to energy security and climate change will drive growth in demand for Australian uranium. While Australia itself does not need a domestic nuclear power industry, we do strongly support the expansion of Australian uranium mining and accept that a growth in nuclear power beyond Australia's shores is a fact of life. Not all countries, as you and I appreciate, are as fortunate as Australia when it comes to energy supply options, and nuclear power will increasingly be used as a reliable baseload power supply in more than 30 nations. Global energy demand is forecast to grow by as much as 40% by 2030. This demand will also flow through to Australia. And there are many misconceptions relating to Australia's future energy mix and how it will change as we move to a carbon-constrained economy. Ladies and gentlemen, we are blessed with an abundance of energy sources which provides us with a range of energy options. Renewables will grow in importance. It's not about one source of energy or another source of energy. There will be a growth in demand for energy, and a growth in the use of all energy options in Australia. The government, as we appreciate, has mandated that 20% of our electricity will come from renewables by 2020. I consider that Australia is very fortunate to have abundant and diverse renewable energy resources. From the Prime Minister down, the government is committed to developing renewables, which is why we have provided unprecedented levels of funding toward achieving this important goal. This affords us the opportunity to be flexible in developing the policy mechanisms to drive growth, renewable energy commercialisation and deployment. I am frequently asked why the government does not support policies used in some European countries to subsidise specific renewable electricity technologies. I simply say the short answer is that we're not about picking winning technologies. It is very expensive and very inefficient. Let the market determine those issues. Germany's solar subsidy, by way of example, saw only around 0.5% of Germany's gross electricity consumption come from solar PV in 2007. Yet German consumers that year paid more than €1 billion in additional power bills to cover the cost of that policy. This is more than $2.5 billion in 1 year for less than 0.5% of energy. The Australian government has the world's best policy settings to achieve growth in renewables and in doing so foster innovation, creativity and healthy competition. Our recent budget included $4.5 billion to support the growth of clean energy generation and new technologies. Of this, more than $1.3 billion was in new funding for the Solar Flagship Program, which will position Australia as a world leader in this vital energy future opportunity. I might also say it's about base load power options, which is the key to energy security. This, I might say, follows last year's budget inclusion of nearly $500,000 to the Renewable Energy Demonstration Program. This program will assist companies to take proven renewable energy pilot schemes through to commercialisation. I was very pleased by the strong response to this program from companies developing wind, solar, geothermal and wave technologies, and I look forward to making funding announcements relating to this program in the foreseeable future. Growth in renewables will occur in Australia. By 2020, they will constitute 20% of our total electricity. This, however, only underscores the importance of finding ways to reduce emissions from the other 80%. Coal is Australia's largest export, and the primary fuel for around 80% of Australia's current power supply. It underpins the security, reliability and low cost of Australia's electricity. In turn, this clearly supports and underpins the competitiveness of Australian industry. While the importance of renewables will increase, coal and gas will continue to produce the bulk of our electricity and therefore ensure energy security prevails in Australia. Reliance on coal is set to increase far more dramatically globally. Australia's entire grid-connected coal-fired power capacity is around 30,000 megawatts. In recent years, China has been adding nearly three times that capacity of new coal-fired generation every year. In the coming decades alone, China will bring online something in the order of 1,000 average-sized coal-fired power stations. This, ladies and gentlemen, equates to 34 times Australia's grid-connected coal-fired electricity capacity. In just one country, in just the next decade, in a lot of ways it's very hard to comprehend, but also represents great export opportunities for Australia, not only from a coal point of view, but also from the point of view of technology. And that takes me to the requirement for coal to actually change with respect to how it goes forward. The use of coal will change an economy, just put a price on CO2 emissions. Technologies capable of significantly reducing CO2 emissions have to be found, not just for coal-fired power stations or gas, but for the many industries which use coal or electricity as a primary source of input. When you think about steel, aluminium, zinc and cement, major employers in Australia in very important regional communities. And like renewables, it will be several years until these technologies reach commercial scale deployment. But this does not mean that CCS and other technologies are undeserving of government support. For those reasons, this year's budget included a $2.4 billion investment in low emission coal technologies, including new funding of $2 billion in industrial scale CCS projects under the Carbon Capture and Storage Flagships Program. The government supporting both renewables and carbon capture and storage, again not picking winners, but trying to make sure that we as a nation invest in all available technology options to guarantee energy security and our economic future. Now, I think that's important because the forecast growth of global energy demand dictates that Australia and our trading partners will require a broad suite of energy options in the years ahead. It is in this context that the government is investing billions of dollars in renewables and carbon capture and storage technologies. I say in conclusion, my friends, that these are not competing alternatives. Any credible response to climate change requires that all sectors be developed as fast as possible. That's the government's ambition, and that's where we will devote our resources and work in partnership with all sections of the Australian energy community. I thank you for the opportunity to be with you today, and I look forward to your questions, and I'll seek to answer them in my normal, direct way.
Morning, Minister. Tim Shanahan from the University of Western Australia. I know that you've just been travelling to Norway to look at the carbon storage project. The Norwegians have been operating at Sleipner. I'm wondering if you could tell us about what you saw and what implications that that might have for Australia, and particularly the Gorgon project in the northwest.
Yes, I had the opportunity at the Prime Minister's request to participate not only in the G8 Energy Ministerial meeting, but also to travel to Norway to participate in an international carbon capture and storage forum. As part of that visit, I visited the Sleipner field in the North Sea, and I actually saw commercially in operation carbon capture and storage. That was important because what has emerged in all the energy ministerial meetings and all the forums over the last 6 to 12 months is an absolute commitment by the global community to try and get carbon capture and storage right. And the Prime Minister's initiative in establishing our own international institute is proving a very important part of the development of those technological options. It's not just about Australia, it's also about the global community achieving the G8 target of 20 demonstration plants by 2020, and we've got to pull our own weight domestically. We've also got to work with the international community to try and put this technology in place in places such as China, because that's where you're going to see the huge growth in the use of coal, as I've outlined here today. But can I also remind you that in terms of carbon capture and storage and being used commercially, not only will we put the demonstration plants in place in Australia, but the Gorgon project on Barrow Island, West Australia, is premised on the use of carbon capture and storage. That project at the completion and operation stage will represent the biggest carbon capture and storage operation in the world, in the LNG industry, which reminds you that this technology is just not for coal, it's also for our oil and gas industry. So I dismiss the suggestion by some environmental groups that carbon capture and storage is pie in the sky. It is real, it is commercially available at the moment. Our objective is to actually put it in place in a commercially viable way, and in doing so reduce the cost of what is fundamental to our future from an energy security point of view.
Thank you. John Hepburn from Greenpeace Australia Pacific. Just a question on the commercial viability of CCS. I'm wondering whether you have done or are planning to do a commercial assessment on how much it would cost to fit CCS to all of the coal power stations in Australia. And second question, what would it take for the government to do what the UK government has done and stipulate that for any new coal plants to be built in Australia, they would need to be fitted with CCS? Because that would seem to be I guess, forcing the industry to put their money where their mouth is.
Firstly, in terms of our legislative framework, Australia has got a world first. We've actually put in place a legislative framework for offshore storage. And I released potential acreage to be commercially considered a matter of about 2 months ago, and that's out there for commercial consideration at the moment. We put our legislative framework in place, which means that at a point in the future, we as a community accept our responsibility to actually store the CO2. And that's provided for in legislation. I hope that the state and territory government, sooner than later, put in place similar legislation so that we've got the same framework in place onshore in Australia. In terms of our future considerations with respect to coal-fired power stations, that is a matter that will receive appropriate attention by state and territory governments. But I must say the focus at the moment is not on new coal-fired power stations, but actually putting these demonstration plants in place. You raise the United Kingdom. It's interesting to note that the United Kingdom is a foundation member of our International Carbon Capture and Storage Institute for this very reason. When we get this right, I predict that they'll be reopening their coal mines because they have got no energy alternative.
Thanks. Richard Bevan from TransN Networks, a high voltage transmission business. My question is in relation to nuclear, Minister. You make the comment that you don't see a need for a local nuclear generation industry at this point in time. My question is, do you foresee that that decision may need to be reviewed at some point in the future, and what would be the trigger for such a review?
Look, as I've said today, we're an energy-rich nation. Unlike a lot of other countries, we've actually got capacity to grow renewables, plus we've got the long-term reliance on coal-fired power stations and gas. We are a major exporter of uranium, because we accept that nations beyond Australia are not as rich in energy capacity as us. My department is producing an energy white paper. I'll wait and see what comes out of those processes, but there is no intention by the current government to actually develop a nuclear industry in Australia. I must say I've got enough problems at the moment trying to finalise a site for a low and medium level nuclear repository in Australia. A process commenced in 1988, but because of emotional scare campaigns run by a range of environmental NGOs, it is proven impossible. This is waste that is currently stored in shipping containers in 100 repositories around Australia, principally in capital cities, in hospitals and universities. Let's do it step by step. Uranium mining is a fact of life in Australia, and so it should be. It's no different to coal mining, nickel mining or any other mining activity in Australia. It's our nuclear waste. I don't know a family in Australia that doesn't know someone who's benefited from nuclear medicine. Let's front up to our responsibilities and supply uranium to the rest of the world, guaranteeing that it's mined with safe hands and used with safe hands. Other countries require it. We are energy rich.
Thank you, Minister. Mark Crowdace from Coffee International. With respect to Australia's natural resources and those being leveraged or commercialised, I guess on the topic of the permit system, have you got any insights in terms of Australian policy and where you think it may head over the next few years around the use it or lose it discussions? Thank you.
Well, firstly, use it or lose it is not new. It underpins the existing legislation with the development of our oil and gas industry. If I've got any criticism, I think retention leases have just been rolled over continually without a proper assessment of whether they are commercially viable. My intention is to make sure that the law as it currently stands is applied. I released a discussion paper last Friday on the issue of retention leases. That does not reflect a government view at the moment, is a discussion paper. But since I became the minister, I've been paying close attention to this issue. Australia is a safe haven. A lot of companies actually gain access to our resources on the basis that they can always come back to Australia. There is no sovereign risk in terms of development opportunities. Well, I actually have a view that we've also got to develop our resources for the benefit of the whole community at times that suit us commercially as a nation. And I think back, yes, we are an important LNG superpower, but we should be even bigger in the market. If we get Gorgon, and I think we will, that's a terrific opportunity. We've got to work at getting INPEX in place in Darwin. And we've also got to focus on Pluto 2, the potential development of Browse and Sunrise, which is not easy because of the nature of the treaty arrangements. So I take this view, I'm going to do everything possible as Minister to bring on fields which, as a result of due process, are considered commercially viable.